Welcome everyone to the Macro Hive week ahead. It's been a busy week and we've got another busy week coming up. Dominique, how are you?
Very well, Ben. Thank you. And yourself?
I'm good. It's just raining here in the UK. It's been a depressing summer, but nevertheless, at least things are interesting in markets. Busy week, so shall we get straight on and start with payrolls? Obviously, we had the big revision to sort of kick us off this week. I wanted to ask two questions there. Number one is, what actually is this revision? Give us some understanding to it. And then the second thing is, this large revision, what does it actually mean for markets and what does it mean for the Fed?
So what it is a census. So the NFP that we get every month is sample based. What the data we got on Tuesday is an exhaustive count of NFP based on unemployment insurance record mainly. And what it showed was that employment, so non-farm employment up to March of this year could be more than 900,000 lower than based on the monthly data, which is sample based. So it's a big difference. It's the second year in a row that we have a big downward revision. Last year it was above 800,000. And it led the Fed to cut 50 basis points. So this data is very important. It's also consistent with something else, which is the fact that the BLS birth death model, which is an estimate of employment decreases caused by business death and increases caused by business creations, which is not picked up by the monthly sample. So that estimate has accounted for unusually large, I think it's about 18 to 90% of the NFP. Usually it's in normal times, it's below 50%. And that has to do with the sort of scrambling of the economy that happened during the pandemic. Very large number of new business creations that has still come down, but that model has been really biased, and it's made us overestimate non-farm employment. So the number that we got on Tuesday is the first revision. We will get every quarter a new revision, so a new census of employment up to March of this year. And then in February of next year, together with the January NFP data, we will get what is called benchmark, annual benchmark revisions. Now, last year, the annual benchmark revision was about 600,000, so lower than the 800,000 in the first estimate. But this is nothing to be sneezed at. The Fed is right to be concerned. We do have an issue with the measurement of NFP.
Oh yeah, I mean my first question was going to be after that is just, and we'll touch on the Fed later, obviously, with them next week. How much will this influence the Fed?
I think it will influence it a lot, to be honest. This is a number I haven't taken very seriously in previous years because I think it's biased. It was biased by the inflow of undocumented migrants who are less likely to participate in unemployment insurance. So even the census I thought was biased. But this year, we've had a big clampdown on illegal immigration. Actually, it started last year, but this year people are talking about a decrease in the number of undocumented workers in the stock. So I think the QCW, that's what the census is called, the quarterly census of employment and wages, I think it's more accurate this time around. And I think the Fed is going to take it very seriously.
Now, we didn't just get jobs data last week or updates to it. We also obviously got prices data. Now, before we get to CPI, there was PPI. What did you take from the miss? It was quite a divergence from expectations.
So the PPI, you really need to split it in two if you want to look at the consequences for the price, consumer price indices. So the consumer goods PPI is completely disconnected from the consumer goods CPI, which is much more driven by import prices, and it's kind of consistent with, in general, the high import penetration of consumer goods market in the US. The services PPI is more tightly correlated with super core services in the CPI, or services excluding housing in PC. And one thing that was interesting was, last month, so people gasped when they saw the increase, which was largely driven by an increase in the trade PPI, which is margins, retail and wholesale margin. Those fell this month. So again, you never want to look at one data point. You need to look at it in the context of the whole series and in the broad macro context. To me, it's a sign that inflation dynamics are not really getting worse. They're not getting better, but they're not getting worse either.
And I know you said not to look at single prints, but obviously then CPI on the other hand, at least the headline figure came out stronger than expected, and the core practically came out in line with consensus, which was what Sam was forecasting going into the event. I mean, what do you make of that number?
So first, kudos to Sam because he did forecast a month-on-month surprise in headline. But otherwise, again, as an economist, I look at the big picture. I put things in context. This wasn't a great number, but it wasn't a terrible number if you exclude that month-on-month upside surprise in headline. The rest was consistent with expectations. If you look at the details, you saw that core goods CPI was unchanged from last month. It's the used car prices that went up, but it looks like it's more due to the relationship between used and new car prices and due to demand pressure. Essentially, fewer people in America can afford new cars as they've become so expensive during the pandemic. Car manufacturer took advantage of the shortages to switch to producing bigger cars with more bells and whistles. I must say, this is not the sort of thing that fascinates me as long as a car takes me from A to B, but for people who likes all the electronics, there's plenty of those. So basically, car affordability is an issue. So the ratio of the price of used car to new cars has gone up, which I think reflects this fact that fewer people can afford new car. And
And also in the I know when it comes to the CPI details, you actually like to strip out some of the car details from the sort of the details, just so you can look at sort of the tariff sensitivity. And did we see that this time around? Is there any broadening of tariff price pressures, or did you not see that?
it's a bit of a mixed bag, and it's interesting because and that's one of the reasons I thought this wasn't a terrible number. So we are going through implementation, tariff implementation. In the Fed surveys, the respondent, like in the Beige Book, and in the meet the Fed contact with the private sector that they've had, private sector, I mean, businesses had told the Fed that it would take 3 to 6 months to absorb the tariff to pass them through. So we are through a full pass-through, and we don't really see goods prices going up much. So that's one thing. One thing that was okay about the CPI, given the context of pass-through. It doesn't look like inflation is getting much worse. The outlier was really the OER, that went up 10 basis points. And there, I think it's noise rather than signal, because if you look at vacancies or rented properties, they are going up. If you look at market-based rents, so the rents of properties that are currently on the market, that inflation is slowing. And last month, I did a little study looking at the share of consumer income spent on housing. It's going up. So clearly, we have affordability issues there. We have another K-shaped recovery where a minority of households with high income are doing okay, but the rest is really struggling. And there is data, all kinds of data, equity results, corporate results. We have pure macro data, anecdotal evidence. It all suggests that the share of households who are struggling to pay for the cost of living, it's going. It's now including the middle tranche. So I don't think this OER increase will last. I think we'll see next month a resumption of the disinflation. And finally, when you look at services, it's the same thing, a mixed bag. Huge increase in something called lodging away from home, which is basically hotels. But that comes after 5 months of disinflation. And if you look at the price level for hotels, it's below where it was in May. So it's not a great print in the sense that there was no downside surprise. But given what's going on with the pass-through of tariff, it's actually an okay print. It tells you that inflation dynamics are not getting worse.
And I guess the important question for the Fed is, what does this mean for PCE?
What does it mean for PCE? So Viresh produced his estimate. He thinks it's about 24 basis points. In my view, the more interesting estimate, the one that Chair Powell keeps referring to, is something called market-based PCE, which is PCE excluding inputted prices like portfolio management fees, for instance. It's not something you directly observe. It's something that the BEA that puts the PCE data together that they estimate. So Viresh estimate of a core market-based PCE is 21 basis points. So that would be 2.6% year on year, the same as in July. Again, given all this inflationary backdrop, all the noise and furor about inflation, actually inflation trends are not getting worse.
Now, before we move on to next week, there were two other things I thought that we should talk about. And the first was the CBO budget review. Obviously, tariffs are super big, and then super important to understand. Was there anything interesting in the CBO budget review?
The interesting thing is that tariff revenues remained around 30 billion. They increased by about 1 billion on the previous month. So we are not seeing an enormous, a very fast increase in tariff revenues. What we are seeing instead is that the average effective tariff, which is just a ratio of tariff revenues to goods imports, based on a very plausible estimate of goods import, that the average effective tariff was 10%, same as in July, same as in June. So that's kind of interesting because outfits like the Yale Budget Lab, they tell us that based on policy announcement, the administration is aiming for a 17.5% average tariff. So what could be going on here is either implementation lag, but I find it hard to believe given that the actual tariff has remained at 10% for 3 months in a row. That would mean no implementation progress. Or the administration has granted so many exemptions that it cannot raise the tariff. And those exemptions, by the way, this granting of exemption, it could reflect the fact that voters are very unhappy about the pickup in inflation. President Trump's net approval rating on inflation, based on a simple average of polls, I mean, the Real Clear Politics website, is minus 21%. So I have a nagging suspicion that between now and the midterm in November, tariff could well stay around 10%. And 10% was actually the low case scenario of the Fed. It's actually something which is, I think, very manageable. The only problem is not that it's not an official policy announcement, so it's not something the Fed can count on. But in terms of inflation dynamics, and in terms of equity market performance, this is actually a very positive development.
Amazing. And then last thing for this week, claims. The initial jobless claims obviously jumped. Is that a real signal or is there something else going on in there?
Oh, it's just a state of Texas, mainly the state of Texas. I mean, initial claims are quite volatile. The more interesting data is continuing claims, and there it's not moved for 6 months, about 1.95 million. So, not much to see there, in my view.
And okay, so let's leave that behind and jump to next week. Before we get to the Fed, we have retail sales. It looks like consensus are expecting another decent month, I think 30 basis points versus 50 last month. What are you looking for on there? And how would you sort of digest that outcome? If it was 30 basis points to you, is that still the consumers surviving, they're happy to buy things, or is there sort of a deeper message line in there?
So it's not great. I mean, retail sales are basically a preview of the comprehensive consumption data released at the end of the month. Since the US GDP is 70% consumption, this is really what you want to look at. So retail sales is basically goods and restaurant spending, and then a few strange things that we don't need to worry about. So 30 bips, it's about flat in real terms. So, the consumption data has been a little bit ambiguous. If you compare current level with November, it's flat. It's been flat for almost three quarters. If you take the lows of January, if you compare current consumption to the low of January and February, that in my view reflected residual seasonality. But anyway, if you take this as your comparison point, consumption is recovering. So that data, the 30 basis point in the control group. So the control group is a more important, interesting one because it eliminates very volatile data, and it's what is used in the GDP accounts to build the whole consumption estimate. So if you look at that and the 30 basis point, it's about flat month on month. So it supports the idea that consumption is not going anywhere, which isn't great.
And I think this leads me quite nicely onto the Fed. So just to sort of summarize, recently we're probably going to get a not great retail sales when you put it in sort of real slash constant terms. The labor market isn't too strong, and there's not a lot to worry about in prices when you actually sort of take a step back and understand how the Fed are looking at them relative to tariffs. So, I mean, the first question I have for you, because the market are flirting with the idea of it, albeit they're definitely not cemented into the idea, is does the Fed cut 50 basis points next week?
So that's my call, but with low conviction. Let me explain why. If you are just looking, so the Fed is balancing two risks, employment and inflation. If you look at the employment risk compared to last year when the Fed did cut 50, they're worse this time around. You have much lower NFP, you have a bigger revision, census revision, which was already exceptional last year, but this year we have again a downward revision, which is the largest in the history of the series. And then very important. The growth backdrop is much weaker than last year. So if you took that alone, 50 basis point, I would be climbing on my soapbox and shouting 50. But in the inflation picture is different. Inflation core PCE is 20 basis point higher than last year, so 2.9%, 2.7% last year. 2.9%, by the way, is still in line with the SCP Q4 average of 3.1%. And the risk are higher, the inflation risk are higher than last year. However, the inflation dynamics, as we've just discussed, and it's not just the price indices, but if you look at wage growth, it's continuing to slow, and wage growth is a key channel for what the Fed fears the most, which is a broadening of the price shock caused by the tariff that would turn into a permanent increase in inflation. The way that would happen would be if workers demanded to be compensated for the higher prices. Obviously, it's not happening. And I think that's one of the reasons for voters' unhappiness. So the inflation dynamics is not bad. Then you look at long-term inflation expectations, market-based inflation expectations, which are the Fed, preferred measure. It's all stable. So that's why I'm thinking that 50%, 50 basis point on balance, more likely than 25 basis point, but my conviction is low because of the difference in inflation dynamics.
Amazing. And then obviously what the actual decision is only one part of this. There's also the SEP and there's Powell's presser. So let's go through both of those. So, I mean, if they do cut 50 or just if they cut at all, how dovish of a shift could you see in the SEP?
So, because this is a risk management cut, and because we are talking about an economic slowdown, not a full-blown recession, I think they would add one cut in 2025 and 2026. Basically, a 50 basis point cut would signal that their assessment of the balance of risk between inflation and employment has changed, and so they would change the dot trajectory accordingly.
And then what about Powell's presser? I mean, from a market side of things, if he does 50 when the market are practically pricing 25, obviously the markets are up, off the gun. They're gonna panic. They're gonna go, well, this isn't what we're expecting. Let's rush to price that. I mean, first question is, how will he handle that? And then the second question is, will he care about the market reaction?
Well, I have a hunch we are going to see the usual Wall Street Journal article by Nick Timiraos, because typically what happens is that when the data forces the Fed to change policy during the pre-meeting blackout period, the Wall Street Journal mysteriously publishes an article that announces it ahead of the meeting. And so that gives a few days to the markets to adjust. The Fed is always worried about shaking markets, even when it's about easing by more than what market expects. And so somehow, mysteriously, the information gets communicated before the actual meeting. So if my call is correct, Timmerhouse is publishing his preview on Sunday or Monday, and it's going to be in there. In terms of the presser, what Powell is going to do is, be like an economist with two hands and say we had to weigh risk to unemployment versus risk to inflation, and he's going to give a well-argued explanation of why, the balance of risk has shifted. And by the way, that the balance of risk has shifted in the estimation of the FOMC is not in doubt. This is what a hawk like St. Louis Fed President Moosanam, for instance, said a week ago. It's a question of whether it's shifted enough to justify a 50 basis point cut.
Okay, and then so there's a decent chance that they cut on 50, albeit with you don't have an incredible conviction on it, but there's definitely a good chance it happens. The follow-up question to that, and sort of the final question for this week ahead, is what's your view for the Fed for the rest of the year then? Do you see them cutting again after this?
Oh, absolutely. This would be based on the continuation of the slowdown, so of growth being, say, between 1% and 1.5%. It was 1.4% in H1 on average. So if growth stays where it is, if unemployment stays roughly where it is, I think they would go one more time this year. If things fall apart, we have a big jump in unemployment. For instance, if we have a big increase in insured, continuing insured unemployment, continuing claims, then I think they will cut a lot because they will get worried about recession. Conversely, if suddenly, the private sector recovers its confidence and they start spending at breakneck pace and unemployment starts dropping, they will stop. The problem for the Fed and for all of us is that where we are in the business cycle at the moment is very unclear. We could be accelerating or we could be slowing. And that's why the Fed decision really is about Fed management, risk management. It's not about responding to a clear change in direction for the economy. It really is about weighing these two risks. And I think a reasonable case can be made for 25 and for 50.
Amazing. So a lot of next week comes down to Nick's fortune teller reading.
To reading the Wall Street Journal.
So basically busy Sunday and Monday, and then Wednesday is confirmation. Amazing, Dominique. Thank you very much for joining me. And thank you everyone for listening to Macro Hive's week ahead.
Thank you, Ben. Good luck, everybody.